Okay, we'll make a start. Thank you. Welcome, everyone. So just as an introduction, tonight is, of course, a special night, Chof Chesivin, the day that the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin came to America in Tovshin Aleph in 1941. And of course, it's a few days before Gimel Tammuz. And we know how important it is to make preparation for Gimel Tammuz. We know this from the way the Rebbe, how the Rebbe treated Yud Shvat, and how he would talk about, extensively, he would talk about the preparations that are needed for Yud Shvat. I heard once a story, actually once in Sydney, one of Rabbi Leib Groner's sons was here, I've forgotten which one, and he forbrang, then it was before Yud Shvat, and he told the interesting story that he was once standing in Gan Eden HaTachton, and he saw his father going to the Rebbe. It was a week or two before Yud Shvat. And he noticed on the floor of the Rebbe's room, there were many bags of mail, sort of unopened mail. He peeked in, he maybe wasn't supposed to, but he did anyway. But and then when his father came out, he said to his father, what's the story? So his father told him that before Yud Shvat, the Rebbe was always very focused and very sort of involved in the hachonis, in the preparations for Yud Shvat. And therefore, sort of his, the opening of the mail sort of is a bit slower. So I'm just bringing that, of course, that Gimel Tammuz, the Yom Elul of the Rebbe, is obviously a very, very special day to us, and needs hachana, needs preparation, needs the preparation in terms of learning the Rebbe's Torah. We know that his kashrus, as it says in our Yom Yom, that his kashrus connection to the Rebbe is mainly through learning the Rebbe's Torah, because just like the Eibishter puts himself into the Torah, as it says in Anochi Hashem Alekecha, and the Gemara says, Anochi is Anon Nafshi Ksovis Yehovis, Hashem says, I wrote myself into the Torah. So too, the Rabbeim, and this is what it says now, Yom Yom, the Friedrich Rebbe writes, that those are people who are asking about his kashrus need to learn the Torah, learn my Torah, says the Friedrich Rebbe, because the Rabbeim, so to speak, put themselves into their Torah, because tzaddikim doimim l'boirom. Tzaddikim are similar to the Creator, so therefore they also put themselves into their Torah, so to speak. So what I wanted to do tonight is I wanted to take a theme that you find a lot in the Rebbe Sichas, kind of an ongoing theme coming up in very different areas and contexts and explanations on different ideas, and go through it and come to a sort of a perspective a little bit also how this is a very, very important theme, or one of the themes in the famous Maimer of Atta Tetzave. Atta Tetzave was the last Maimer the Rebbe was Magia that he edited, and was given out not long before the Rebbe had a stroke. And Chassidim learn it every year. There's so much in there that is clear that the Rebbe was preparing us, so to speak, for the time that we're in now. And one of the themes in that Maimer is something which will be the same, but very relevant, and a sort of a very relevant lesson which we need to take and to learn for times that we're in now. So let's just try and go through it. So the theme, basically, and I'll explain a few examples of how it comes up. One of the themes the Rebbe talks about, b'chalal, in all the Rebbe Sichas, many of the Rebbe Sichas, is the idea of bittul. Bittul, which means giving ourselves up, surrendering to the Eibishter. Sometimes it expresses itself in things like Kabbalah's oil, just doing what Hashem wants us to do, the idea of chukim, for example. Mesiris Nefesh is the same idea. Mesiris Nefesh means we give ourselves over to the Eibishter and we do whatever the Eibishter wants us to do, whether we understand, whether we don't understand, higher than Seichel, even if it means being difficult, even if it means surrendering completely to something that we don't understand, that is higher than us, that is completely transcended and so on. All that is a very, very big theme, Bechlal in the Rebbe Sichas. But the theme I want to touch on more is this. The Rebbe talks about this idea of, and it'll become clearer as we go along, hopefully, that one of the big themes of the Rebbe Sichas is that the Rebbe talks about the idea of bittul, mesiris nefesh, kabbalas oil, all things to do with something beyond our understanding, beyond what we call in Chassidus our koiches hagluim, our conscious faculties like our seichel or our midas, but then the importance of taking it in to our consciousness, to our conscious midas and our conscious seichel. So let's give a couple of examples that will become clear as we go along. First example, of course, is the famous idea of Nasi v'Nishma. Just had Shavuos not so long ago, And the Rebbe asks a famous question. The Gemara says that everyone knows, even children know, they learn in kindergarten, that the Eden said, Nasi before Nishma, we will do and then we'll understand. And the Malachim came down and they gave us crowns. But the Gemara says like this, the Gemara says, B'shoshi yigdimu Nasi l'nishma, when the Yidden said Nasi before Nishma, 600,000 Malachim came down and gave each year two crowns, one for Nasi, one for Nishma. So the problem is that the sentence, if you think about it properly, the sentence doesn't actually flow properly. What were the crowns for? So we know one of the greatnesses that we say about the Yidden is that they said Nasi before Nishma. So if that was the greatness, that they said Nasi before Nishma, then it's just get one crown. The fact that we said Nasi first, that's one crown. If, however, Nasi and Nishma somehow are both important, then why is it two crowns, one or three crowns then? Or why does it say Bishosh Shigdimu? In other words, is it the Nasi and the Nishma, or is it that the Nasi came before the Nishma? Which one is it? And the Rebbe explains in many, many places, but the idea behind it is the following. What is Nasi? Nasi means, and this is something that I heard recently in a shiur from Rabbi Yoel, who explains it obviously based on the Rebbe Sichas, and explains it in a very beautiful way. What is Nasi? Nasi means to surrender to Hashem, even when we don't understand. We will do even if we don't understand. However, there are two ways to do something that we don't understand. One way, and I'm going to try to do this a little slowly. By the way, if anyone has any questions, please feel free. I think you're muted, but if you can, you can either unmute yourself and ask, or you can put it in the chat and I'll try and answer it. But this is an important nekuda because it'll flow into everything else. One way is that a person can sometimes, you know, Hashem give us mitzvahs we don't understand, or he asks us to do things we don't understand. But we can do it in a way where it's still coming from understanding. What do I mean? A person is a smart person, can make a cheshbon. He can develop an idea, al pi seichel, intellectual idea, that makes sense, that's logical. What's the idea? The idea is that we are limited, and our seichel is limited. And therefore, it makes sense, again, the emphasis is it makes sense to do something that we don't understand. It's a logical thing. Hashem is greater than us. He understands better than us. He's smarter than us. He sees the bigger picture. He knows what's good for us. And so therefore, our seichel is limited. So he gives us things we don't understand. And it's logical, even in our seichel, to do things that is not according to our seichel, that is higher than our seichel. It makes sense. But that's not the true meaning of Nasi. The Torah says, Higdimu Nasi l'nishma. What's the emphasis? The Rebbe explains, the emphasis is that we are given over to Hashem, we surrender to Hashem, not because it makes sense. Not because it makes sense to go beyond our seichel, no. We surrender to Hashem because intrinsically we are given over to Hashem with such an emunah, such a faith that comes from our etzem ha-neshama, it comes from deep down in our neshama, it comes from a place which is completely higher than seichel. That's where Mesiras Nefesh comes from, Kabbalah Sol comes from, higher than seichel comes from, everything. In other words, the Nasi is not a Nasi according to seichel. The Nasi is a Nasi which is intrinsically higher than seichel. We are given over to Hashem not because we made a cheshbon that it's good to do something that we don't understand. No, we do it because we are given over to the Eibishter. Whatever he tells us to do, we do. Makes sense, doesn't make sense. And it's not even according to a calculation that we made. It's just that's who we are. A Yid, at deep down in their etzem and neshama, is given over to Hashem no matter what. Emunah by definition means something we don't understand. It's higher than seichel. If a person is given over to Hashem in a way that is completely higher than seichel, that's what it means, b'shoshi higdimu, nasi l'nishma, the nasi came before the nishma, meaning it's got nothing to do with understanding. Because if you give over yourself to Hashem, even though you don't understand, but that's in itself an intellectual cheshbon, then it's not higdimu nasi l'nishma. Higdimu nasi l'nishma means it's got nothing to do with seichel. If that's what happens, then we go to the next part. And the next part is Nishma, because we know that Hashem ultimately wants us to understand also. He wants us to use our brain. He wants us to really understand his Torah mitzvahs as much as we can possibly understand. But that in itself also can be two ways. Person can understand because he really needs to understand, and it's much better. He'll only serve the Eibishter properly if he understands. Or maybe the Nishma itself is like Naseh. The Nishma itself, the understanding itself, is higher than Seichel. What do I mean by that? So I'll just share with you a story. I'm sure I've shared it before. A story with my grandfather, Rabbi Moshe Gerari, who was he lived in Tel Aviv, and he was a very, very big Hasid. He was known as a masculine Chassidus, meaning he had a very deep understanding of Chassidus. So Toshin Yud Beis, he came to the Rebbe. It was the first time he came to the Rebbe after the Friedrich Rebbe was Nistalik. And he was there for a good few months. And he was there by the Purim Fabringen of Toshin Yud Beis. Purim had the Purim flavor to it. And in those days, Chassidim used to sometimes go over to the Rebbe in the middle of a Fabringen and ask something, or ask for a bracha, whatever the case is. That went for a number of years, and then it stopped. And he went over to the Rebbe, and I guess in the Purim spirit, he said to the Rebbe the following. He said that he's asking the Rebbe a brocha for Emunah. A brocha for Emunah. Why? Because he said to the Rebbe, Val fashtein fashteitman garnished. Because understanding, we don't understand anyway. We don't understand anything. So therefore, he's asking the Rebbe a brocha for Emunah. So the Rebbe said to him something very deep. The Rebbe said to him, I'll say in Yiddish for those who don't understand, I'll translate and explain it. The Rebbe said to him, Fashtein darfmin. We have to understand, but we don't, but we mustn't need to understand. We mustn't want to understand. It means this following. We have to understand because Hashem wants us to understand. Why? Because Hashem wants us to serve him with every part of who we are, the subconscious and the conscious. He wants us to understand. He wants us to serve him with every part of our makeup, including our brain, our heart, our power of doing everything. Everything about us must understand. If we serve Hashem only with bittul, only with understanding, then part of us is gone to sleep. Part of us is not serving Hashem. So therefore Hashem said, no, after you have the foundation of Naseh, where you're ready to do anything, even not because you worked it out that it's important to do it. You're doing anything because that's who you are. You're surrendered to Hashem completely. Part of that surrender has to also be that you understand. And you understand properly. That you open up a maimer, you open up a sicha, you learn a piece of Gemara or Mishnah, and you ask a question, and you try and understand, and you're passionate about the understanding, and you argue with your chavrusa, or you ask a question, and you ask a mashpia, a teacher, and you argue, and you debate, and you explore, and you analyze. Why? Because Hashem wants you to. I don't need to understand. In other words, I won't be lacking in my commitment to Hashem if I don't understand. If a person sort of needs to understand, and only when he understands, then he's complete in his commitment to Hashem. That's not a proper understanding. That's not an understanding that comes after Naseh. He needs to understand. That means he only is really committed if he understands properly. He'll do it if he doesn't understand also, because he knows that's important, but he's missing something if he doesn't understand. The true bittul to Hashem is that of course we have to understand, but we don't need to understand. We have to understand because Hashem wants us to understand. So what does that mean? That's why the Malachim gave to the Yidden two crowns, one for Naseh, one for Nishma. Because both the Naseh and the Nishma came from bittul. Meaning, how do we know that? Because the starting point was Naseh. The starting point was complete bittul. Not because we worked it out, that's the way to do it, but because that's who we are. We are surrendered to Hashem completely. And because the Naseh came first and then the Nishma, that means the Nishma was a follow-on from the Naseh, and therefore they gave us two crowns. What's the idea of a crown? A keser, a crown, is on top of the head. The head is the highest part of the human being, and the head represents the seichel, the understanding. That's the highest part of the conscious human being, seichel. What's a crown? A crown is on top of the head, something that transcends seichel. It's higher than seichel. So they gave us two crowns, one's for the Naseh, one's for the Nishma, meaning even the Nishma got a crown. Why did the Nishma get a crown? Because even the Nishma was higher than Seichel. We understand, and we understand properly, and we use our brain, and we use our heart, and we use everything that Hashem gave us, all our talents and everything. Why? Also because of higher than Seichel. Also because of our bittul. This idea hopefully will become clearer with the various examples. Let's go to a different example. There's a beautiful sikha of the Rebbe. Again, just let me summarize the point here. The point is that the starting point, the Rebbe's big theme is, it comes up in so many places. The starting point is bittul, complete surrender to Hashem. And then everything else has to come also. We can't stop with bittul, but everything that comes afterwards, our seichel, our middos, everything is in the context of that foundation. Let's give another example. There's a beautiful sikha of the Rebbe when it comes to Yaakov Avinu. We know Yaakov Avinu spent 20 years in Lavan, by Lavan's house. And the whole time, what did he do? He was serving Hashem, of course, but what did he do? He was busy with sheep, sowing sheep. Seven years, he pastured Lavan's sheep for Rachel. Then it happened to be Leah. Another 7 years, again with sheep. Then another 6 years where this kind of sheep and that kind of sheep, and they changed the salary and dotted sheep and spotted sheep and all different kinds of sheep. The whole thing was sheep. Okay. And he got an amazing amount of sheep. Then he leaves Lavan and he sends a message to Yaakov. He sends Malachim to Esau, I mean, to see what Esau is doing. And they come back and they tell him that Esau is about to come, and his 400 men is going to fight you. But in the message, when he sends to Esau through the Malachim, he says to Esau, "Mim Lavan garti, I lived with Lavan and I got a lot of wealth." And what does he say? He says, "Vayhi li shoir v'chamoir, I got oxen, I got donkeys, servants, maidservants." Somewhere in the middle there, he also puts in the tzoyin, he got sheep as well. Now, where did he get all these things? I think Rashi explains. That obviously he has so much sheep, so he sold them. He sold them for bulls, he sold them for oxen, he sold them for cows, for donkeys, for slaves, for maidservants, for chulu v'chulu. Says the Rebbe, his primary wealth came from sheep. And now suddenly he's on the way to Esav. And in the way to Esav, what does he tell him first? He tells him first that he got shoir v'chamoir, oxen and donkeys. Only later he sticks in the sheep also. What's the pshat? Pshat's like this. The Rebbe says the most beautiful thing. Tzoyin, sheep, is Kabbalah soil. Tzoyin is bittul. And that's the idea of a sheep. A sheep follows. A sheep is surrendered. It's a soft animal. It does what it's told to do. It follows the leader, the shepherd, the shepherd dog, whatever the case is. Tzoyin is a symbol of complete bittul. The foundation of a yid is true bittul. Foundation of the yid is only bittul. However, bittul means that we are completely subservient and surrendered to Hashem. Like the Rebbe explains in Tanya, that the neshama is called Neir Havai, the candle of Hashem. And the Alter Rebbe says, what's pshat the candle? The candle of Hashem, says the Alter Rebbe in Tanya, a beautiful thing. Just like a candle is always going up. Why is a candle always going up? Because a fire wants to actually go away from the candle. Because the fire down here wants to become part of the source of the fire. Now, without going into great detail, is for you say this, the source of fire is not the fire we have down in this world, but the fire we have in this world is connected to that fire. And the whole time the fire is trying to become part of the original fire. Says the Alter Rebbe, it's a really strange thing. If the fire becomes part of the original fire, the fire won't be an independent entity anymore. It'll become completely consumed by the original fire. Yet that's what the fire wants to do. Similarly, the neshama doesn't want to be in the body. Neshama doesn't want to be a metzias in the body. Neshama actually wants to become part of the Eibishter. That's it. Wants to become totally bottled to the Eibishter. To the point it'll cease to exist even as an independent entity. Wants to become just part of Hashem's reality. That's what a yid is. A yid really is bittul. It wants to become only no independent metzias. However, as the Rebbe explains, there are times in life where we have to show strength. We have to use the strength that Hashem might have given us, and we have to use a strength that will appear to be an independent strength, a powerful strength that doesn't look like bittul, it doesn't look like Kabbalah so. Nevertheless, it's coming from Kabbalah so. When you go into the world and you have to fight an Esav, there you can't be a bittul dikayid. You gotta show strength, you gotta show I'm someone. I got strength. I got talents. I can outdo you. I can outdo you in a debate. I can outdo you in doing strength. I can win the argument. I can win the fight. You're fighting with the Yetzer. You're sowing strength. The strength that doesn't, on its surface, smell of Kabbalah soil. Doesn't smell of bittul, so to speak. However, where does it come from? You use it because Hashem wants. It's like the nishma that comes from the Nase. It's because Hashem wants us to be strong. Hashem wants us to go out in the world. Hashem wants us to show strength fighting the klipa. Not to be just a, a schwachinke, like they say, like a soft person, a completely surrendered person, and you have to show complete strength. But why are we showing the strength? Not because of gaiva, not because of ego, not because I want to show my strength. I want to show my strength because I want to be bottled to Hashem. And Hashem says, sometimes you can't walk around with bittul. Sometimes you got to show strength, like it says, by yigbal liboy bedarke Hashem. The pasuk says he lifted up his heart very high. He was strong. He was high. He was he showed breitkeit, he showed strength, but darkei Hashem, the ways of Hashem, because that's what Hashem wants. Hashem wants, sometimes we got to fight strong, which fighting strong is not exactly an expression of bittul, but it becomes from the bittul. That's why when it comes, when Yaakov, the whole 20 years, what does he do? He's involved only in sheep, bittul, complete bittul. But then it's time to face Esav. Esav represents not just Esav, the physical Esav, but Esav represents the clipper. Esav represents a force of evil. Comes along Yaakov and he says, I want to send you a message. Don't think I'm a little sheep, that I'm a surrendered guy, like I'm a shvach guy. No. I can be an ox. I can be a donkey. I can be strong. An ox is a symbol of strength. An ox that, you know, bull that rushes, that gores. I can show real strength. Says Rashi, where did he get the strength from? Where did he get the shor from? Where did he get the chamor from? He got it from the tzoyim. Everything that Yaakov had, the base, the foundation was the tzoyim. Foundation, that's the starting point. The foundation is the tzoyim. And of course, that's an amazing lesson of avodah. In other words, people always, when they talk about bittul, people always get a little bit worried, especially nowadays. Talk too much about bittul, they say, but where's the self? Person has to have self as well. You have to, you know, you can't just be a doormat. Of course, it shouldn't be a doormat. That's the idea. You're not supposed to be a doormat. Of course, we have to have strength. Strength in Avodas Hashem, but people get nervous a little bit. You know, where's the self? The answer is, of course, there's a self. Hashem gave us a self to work with, but that whole self must only be in the context of bittul. The expression of self is only to serve Hashem. And the expression of self is through the inspiration and the guidance of that bittul. There's no expression of independent self. There's a lot of expression of self. We have to learn, we have to teach, we have to be strong, we have to explain, we have to be passionate. That's all part of self. We have to use our talents, we have to use the strength that Hashem gave us. And it's all true. That's all expressions of self, but it's self only coming from tzoyim. It's the self coming from the bittul. That's where it's coming from. And then it's okay. And then it's not only okay, it's critical and it's important because that's what Hashem wants. Where do we find this very, very emphasized? And another very famous sikh of the Rebbe, I'm sure many of you know the sikh already, but I want to just repeat it sort of a little bit briefly because it's so relevant to this topic. The famous sikh where the Rebbe explains why Bachabad, we are so unbelievably makpid in Gibrochts on Achron Shel Pesach, which l'chayr is a very, very strange thing, because we know that the whole first part of Pesach, we crazy machmir not to have gibrochts. We cover the matzah, we make sure it doesn't go anywhere. One crumb is a problem, and all this kind of stuff, right? And suddenly, when it comes to Achron Shel Pesach, not only are we lenient in gibrochts, which some people are, other chassidim also are, but we start dafka to be machmir. And the Rebbe explains a very beautiful thing. He says, first of all, it's a very interesting thing. We know, it goes to a general question, right? We know that on Pesach, we talk about chometz as being the worst thing. It's we the most machbir. We have all the chometz on Pesach, great, right? The Zohar says someone who eats chometz on Pesach is serving avodah zarah. Chometz, we know, is always, we always talk about. It's a symbol of ego. It's a symbol of gaiva, of yeshus. That's a terrible thing. Even a mashu, even a drop. But you know, but if you take it 7 weeks later on Shavuos, suddenly in the Beis Hamikdash there was a korban called shtei halechem, and that shtei halechem, the two breads, not only was it allowed to be chometz, it had to be chometz. It was a mitzvah of chometz. You had to be chometz. There's a couple of times, normally in the Beis Hamikdash, all the korbanos were matzah, actually. Not everyone knows that. The lechem aponim, even the 12 breads we talk about, actually were matzah, when they weren't chometz. But there were a few times you had to have chometz, and shavuos had to be chometz. So what's going on? Is chometz a bad thing or it's a good thing? What's a pshat? And the Rebbe explains also an interesting thing that we find. What happens is we start off with matzah, we start off on Pesach with matzah, and then we sort of ease ourselves into the chametz. First of all, on Achron Shel Pesach, we not only chametz chas v'shalom, it's still Pesach, but we a bit lax. We're not lax. We actually dafka do shruya. We actually eat gebrochs, which gebrochs was a chumra that you might come to chametz. Achar Pesach, we're not so worried about that chashash anymore. You go a little bit further into the Omer, you have Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni, the Gemara says, chametz and matzah imoy babayis. The Pesach Sheni, they used to still eat matzah with the Korban Pesach, but they had to have chametz in the house also. Pesach, you know chametz, you can't even own chametz. Pesach Sheni, you can have chametz, you can even eat chametz, but you have to have matzah also. So there's matzah chametz. And then comes Shavuos, and there's a mitzvah to eat chametz. What's the pshat? The Rebbe says, very simple. Of course, Pesach, we know, is the beginning of the cycle of a Yid. It's the first Yontif. So the Yidin were born as a nation. And therefore, the Eibishter gave us a foundation. He says, you want to become my nation? Foundation number one is matzah. Matzah. Matzah means total and absolute surrender with no sense of self whatsoever. In other words, first of all, you've got to get rid of self. The Maharal says a beautiful thing. I know this is not a Pesach shir, but it's so important for the idea. The Maharal says an idea like this. Then we know in the Gemara, Pesach matzah is that we eat matzah to remember the freedom, chayrus. Yet we know that in the Gemara it says that matzah is lechem oini, it's poor man's bread. That's why it has to be a broken piece of matzah. Says the Maharal, what does that mean? L'chayra, if we are remembering freedom, if we're remembering chayrus, then why would you have a lechem oini, a poor man's bread? You should have beautiful stuff like the Arba Kosis, beautiful dishes, the Gemara says, and the Shulchan Aruch says we should have on the Pesach table to show how free we are. And here suddenly, We have to remember the chayrus by eating matzah, and matzah is a poor man's bread. Why would you have a poor man's bread if you're symbolizing freedom? And the Maharal says a beautiful thing. He says, what does it mean, poor man's bread? What is a poor man? An oni has nothing. He says, that's true freedom. It doesn't mean being poor man's bread literally, but he talks about a concept which I like to call positive poverty. What does positive poverty mean? That you get rid of self completely. You're starting a new cycle of serving Hashem. Make sure there's not a trace of self. Because if there's a trace of self, then it gets mixed in, a little bit of ego, then you're not serving Hashem anymore. You're serving yourself and you're serving your own self-interest. And therefore, you're going to mix your own opinions and your own perspectives. And it's not going to be exactly what Hashem wants. In order to serve Hashem, Hashem says the foundation of a Yid is matzah, lechem oini, poor man's bread. You're poor, you have nothing. You get rid of self completely without any trace of self. However, ultimately, although that's the foundation, but that's not the ultimate kavanah. The intention of Hashem is Hashem gave us a self. So what are we supposed to do with that self? Hashem gave us that self. He gave us talents. He gave us perspectives. He gave us seichel. He gave us midas. So we should get rid of all that? What's the idea? The idea is that you have to first get rid of it all. Then once you are completely bottled to Hashem, once your perspective in life is, I am not my own person. You know that the Rebbe used to, one of the big things the Rebbe used to quote often, and I'll just end this word by quoting that idea. There's a Maimar Chazal, Ani Nivresi L'Shamesh Eskoini. I was created to serve my master. But there's another version which the Rebbe would often quote and explain the difference between the two, that Ani Loi Nivresi, I am not created Elo L'Shamesh Eskoini, only to serve my master. So the Rebbe, what's the difference between the two versions? They're two Madregas. Ani Nivresi L'Shamesh Eskoini, I was created to serve my master means I was created, I exist. But my purpose is to serve Hashem. But there's still an I there. Ultimately, now I'm not saying we're all going to reach this madrega, but this is the perspective, the mindset we have to have. Ultimately, ani lo nivresi. I was not created, I don't exist altogether. I'm completely bottled. Elo, my only purpose, my only existence is to serve Hashem. I tell a famous Chassidus story. A story they used to tell about two Yidden in a shtetl, that the famous Chassidish Meister that were told by Fabringens after the middle of L'chaim. And the story goes like this, that in the shtetl one time, there was big news in the shul, that they're building train tracks, and the train which was just recently invented is coming into the town. So one Poshita Yid in the shtetl, he asks his friend, what's the big deal about a train? He says, you don't know what a train is? A train means that when the wagon goes from one shtetl to another, you don't need a horse anymore, a ferd. You don't need a ferd anymore, a horse anymore to pull the wagon. That's what he said. You don't need the horse. He says, it can't be such a thing. How does it go then? So I'll explain to you. Apparently, there's a locomotive and a steam, and it has coal, and the steam produces a koyach, and the koyach pulls the wagons, and it's mamash gevaldik. He says, I don't believe it. It's impossible for such a thing to happen. One day, the whole town comes up, the whole shtetl comes up, and this Yid also with his friend who explained it to him, they go to the train tracks, the train is coming. And the moment arrives and the train tracks come steaming into the station, it's you know, the old trains, and they're steaming and steaming, and there's no horse to attack, and it's mamash coming into the station, and it stops, and everyone's cheering and clapping, and it's mamash gewaldig, and it's a big simcha. Suddenly, the guy who explained it to the poshet the Yid about the train, he sees his friend bending down, and he's looking at the side of the train, underneath the train, and on the side of the train. He's looking. He says to him, "Was suchst du? What are you looking?" He says, "Muss sein irgendwo ein kleiner Pferdel." He said, "Somewhere there must be a small horse, a small Pferd." So the Chassidim used to tell this Meister, because he say like this. Sometimes a person, he says, "Yeah, I'm surrendering to the Eibishter, everything, only the Eibishter, not I don't mix in, I'm getting here my yeshus." But sometimes subleibt a kleiner Pferdel, there's still a small horse there. You don't want to give up yourself completely. You want to have a little bit of a seat at the table. You want to have a vote as well. Of course, mostly the Eibishter, but I also want to have a little bit of an opinion. And that's what it means, alin lo nivresi, no. Matzah means I don't have any opinion. Matzah means I'm totally surrendered to the Eibishter. That's what bittul means. However, says the Rebbe, that's the vort. But the Eibishter really wants the self. He wants the self to serve him. So once you are totally bittul, you've created an empty slate, then slowly through Svira So'imer, you can start, as we go through the Omer and we refine ourselves and we totally bittul and we nurture the bittul and we explain the bittul and everything like that, we can then start to reintroduce the self. But now the self will come back as a different self. It'll come back in, and the self will come back in the vessel of bittul. In other words, any part of self, any part of your seichel, your midas, your feelings, your talents, every your skill set, anything that's going to come back and serve Hashem, which it should, which it must, it will come back in the context of the bittul. It will not move from the guidance of the bittul. It'll be your unique thing. It'll be your understanding and your talent and your skill and yourself, but it's only completely working the way the Eibishter wants it to work, because it won't deviate from that bittul for one iota, because you were emptied out completely, and now you're bringing back the self. So first of all, it happens slowly, says the Rebbe. First it happens Achron Shel Pesach, when we start to dip. Then we have Pesach Sheni, where you still need to really focus on the matzah, but you can have chometz also. And then when it comes to Shavuos, chometz is no longer a danger, because you've learned to have self, but that self is only in the context of bittul. It's like the nishma coming from the naseh, because it's only because you're doing it, you're expressing self, because that's what the Eibishter wants, not because you want to mix your own ego into it, but rather it's part of what Hashem wants you to do. So yes, you're using your unique self, but it's only in the context of complete bittul. There's many, many other sifras where the Rebbe brings this out, but I want to go now and finish off with a vort, a very deep idea that's explained in the famous Maimer of Atta Tetzave, which I'm sure many of you have learned many times. But it's the Maimer which we learn always around Gimel Tammuz. It's the last Maimer that the Rebbe gave out, meaning the Rebbe said it many years. The Rebbe said it many years before Gimel Tammuz, but it was only edited in Muga, and the Rebbe gave it out sort of as a Maimer for Purim Katan on Tovshin Nun Beis, which is the last time the Rebbe gave it a Maimer. And over there it talks about, he doesn't say these words, but he talks about Mesiras Nefesh. He talks about Mesiras Nefesh of Russia and Mesiras Nefesh of America. He doesn't say the word America. He says the countries from where they came, which was more sort of easy to serve Hashem, because it's less, they weren't sort of threatened by you know, threatened to die or to be killed if they kept Torah mitzvahs and so on. And it comes from a whole explanation that the Rebbe gives about Emunah and two levels of Emunah. And he talks about the deepest level of Emunah, which is the Amunah of Yechida Shema Nefesh. We know that there are five Madregas of the Neshama. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chai, Yechida. And the deepest level, so Nefesh, Ruach, just to explain briefly, Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, that's called the Koiches Agluim. That's our conscious faculties. In other words, our Seichel, our Midas, our behavior, and so on. The conscious part of the person is divided into three levels. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, which is Nefesh is behavior, like how we think and speak and do. Ruach is our midas, our feelings, and then neshama is our seichel. Then we have Chaya, which is sort of our will, our desire. It's a bit transcendent. It's not exactly like Seichel. It drives the Seichel. It's Mashpi on the Seichel. But then for the purpose of this discussion, let's talk about the fifth level, which is Yechida. Yechida is Mamish, the deepest level of the Neshama. It's the Etzem HaNeshama. It's a part of the Neshama that is one with Hashem. And the Rebbe talks about the Mesiris Nefesh that comes when the Yechida Sheba Nefesh is revealed. But before he does that, he explains how it works, because it comes from the emunah, that the emunah that comes from Yechida Sheba Nefesh. What does that mean? So we know that he explains two levels of emunah, but before he explains two levels of emunah, let's talk about the third level of emunah. There's the emunah of a non-Jew, which Chassidus talks about. What's the emunah of a non-Jew? The emunah of a non-Jew is not an absolute emunah. A guy can also believe, but he cannot believe like a Yid. A non-Jew can believe a munah al pi seichel. He worked it out. He worked it out that Hashem created the world. He has scientific proofs that there must be a creator. He understands that a life without a munah is not worth living, whatever the case is. But he understands that to that point of seichel. A Jewish munah, normally it's explained that a Yiddish munah is deeper than that. What is it? So like this, that when we have a munah because we understand, that's like the difference between hearing something and seeing something. Okay, so let's just work that out a little bit. If I convince you, right, you're looking at me on the Zoom, but if I convince you that in the other room just behind the door that's closed there, there's a table, and I prove it to you scientifically that there's beyond sort of such an unbelievable argument that there's a table there, you'll believe me. However, you know at the back of your mind, you believe me because the proof is very persuasive and it's very compelling. But there always exists a possibility that perhaps that proof can be refuted. But how about if I went down, I opened that door and I showed you this taka table there, and you saw the table? Nothing will be able to disprove it, because seeing is absolute certainty. Seeing is believing, like they say, right? That's why al pi halacha, someone who saw a crime scene cannot be an aid, cannot be a witness at the trial, because a witness has to be impartial, and a judge has to be impartial, has to see both sides of an argument, and he can't. He saw the crime, so he knows it happened. So therefore, he can't be a witness. Sorry, ain't aid nasadai. And that's why a witness can't become a judge, because a witness saw it, and the judge has to become impartial. So that's the emunah of a yid. Many places explains that the emunah of a yid that we were given in Matan Torah, we were given from Avraham Avinu, is that we have a emunah which is at the level of complete certainty. Then the Rebbe takes it a step further, and he says that's the emunah of Chaya. But the munah of Yechida is different. The munah of Yechida means not that the emunah is so strong because I saw something. It's so strong because I am that thing. Again, the emunah that comes from seeing is like that we have such a munah as like we saw Hashem, like Matan Torah. There was a clarity of absolute certainty, like we mamish, like as if we saw Hashem. It's absolutely so. But when you see something, you and that thing are still two separate things. When you are that thing, when you're one with that thing, then that's it. That's the ultimate emunah. The emunah that comes from Yechidah Shebenefesh is the emunah that we are one with the Eibishter. Not we saw the Eibishter, we're one with the Eibishter. We and the Eibishter are one thing, therefore there's nothing else. Says the Rebbe in the Maamar of Atta Tzave that the emunah coming from Yechidah Sheba Nefesh is what gave room throughout generations for the concept of Mesiris Nefesh. I once heard a Maisa, one of the Raskins, the Chassidim, the great Chassidim in Russia, a Mamash Baal Mesiris Nefesh to the highest degree. And it was all Maisa, nice needs to be understood, you can whatever, but this is the Maisa. Maisa was the Mamash didn't have nothing to eat and he was wasting away. But there was, and the doctor said he must eat meat. And but there was no kosher meat. So he says, not eating trefa meat. No. So they tried to talk him into it. It's okay, you can eat meat because it's a pekuach nefesh, sakana, whatever. So he said, so all's good and fine. It's all good. I cannot put it into my mouth. It's impossible. I can't. Okay, I'm not saying this is the psak for every person, but it's the concept. The Chassidim in Russia, when they were threatened that you, if you keep Shabbos, you're going to be imprisoned for Samaria for 10 years, whatever the case is. Or, you know, by them, it wasn't even a suffix. It wasn't like a calculation. The Yechidus Shemenefesh exploded. The Yechidus Shemenefesh was so strong. The Yechidus Shemenefesh, the Emunah from coming from the Yechidus Shemenefesh, which, by the way, the Yechidah is not always revealed. The Yechidah just exploded. The Yechidah, like, it explodes by the Ilon Yom Kippur, and you know, that's it. Like, it's, there's nothing else besides Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. The Yechidah of the Yid exploded, and when the Yechidah is revealed, it's not pshat, I have a question, should I machal Shabbos, not machal Shabbos, should I eat the treif, not eat the treif, should I listen to the Russian government, not listen to the Russian government? There's no question. As you base Thomas, all I did Mesiris Nefesh, right? It's pure Mesiris Nefesh. There's no question because it comes from the Yechidus Shema Nefesh. Well, it's not something I have a question, me and the Eibishter. I'm one with the Eibishter. If I'm one with the Eibishter, that's it. There's no questions. It's an absolute certainty. That's the way the Rebbe explains the Mesiris Nefesh that comes from the Yechidus Shema Nefesh, which we saw in Purim story, we saw and we saw what the Yidden in Russia, we saw throughout the ages. Comes the Rebbe with the big Chidush. He says, there's a deeper Mesiris Nefesh. You know, it looks like this. Of course, when you see the Russian Mesiris Nefesh, that's Mesiris Nefesh and its purity. That's what we learn Mesiris Nefesh for. But actually, there's something deeper than that. And explains this, and this is really the same theme as we've been talking to till now. When a Yidah's Mesiris Nefesh coming from the Yechidah Sheba Nefesh, what happens when the Yechidah explodes? See, again, we're divided into two parts of our being. As we call the koiches hagluim, the conscious part of who we are, the self, the conscious self, our brain, our heart, our skill sets. And then there's Yechidah Shema Nefesh, where the real bittul lives. When the Yechidah reveals itself, everything else goes to sleep. The Yechidah knocks out the conscious self. There is no conscious self. The Yid in Russia, who was threatened with keeping a mitzvah, not keeping a mitzvah. Yid in Russia had a question, there was no mikveh, there was no wheat for Pesach. And his mom has nothing to eat. And the question was, do it, not do it, b'koach nefesh, not b'koach nefesh. The Rebbe always explains, that's a really cheshbonus. It was higher than cheshbonus. There was no thinking process. There was no conscious process. It was just yechidah sheba nefesh. Just yechidah. That's all it was. The person was like the adrenaline of Mesiris Nefesh. The person was operating only on Mesiris Nefesh. However, says the Rebbe, a beautiful thing. After, when the Yidden came to countries where it was easier to serve Hashem, like today, basically, we still have religious freedom, even though in some parts of the world it's really starting to be threatened a little bit, but okay, we have religious freedom. Basically, let's say, when the Rebbe talks about they came to Medinois, they came to countries which was easier. The Rebbe has a very sharp lashon there. He says that those Yidden, sometimes when they came to places where it was easier to serve Hashem, the Mesiris Nefesh wasn't so obvious. Why? Because in a way, it's a harder Mesiris Nefesh. The Rebbe says that the real Mesiris Nefesh is when we take that Yechidah Sheba Nefesh and we bring it into the conscious self without the conscious self disappearing. In other words, the matzah becomes the chometz, but only after the matzah. Yeah, we have Yechidah Shema Nefesh, which is complete bittul and Mesiris Nefesh. But then we have nowadays where we're not threatened. We don't have a gun to our head. So we have nothing threatening us, like the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, you know, when it comes to Avodah Zorah, every Yid has Mesiris Nefesh because the Yechidah Shema Nefesh just explodes. When the Yid in Russia had a gun to his head, his Yechidah Shema Nefesh pushed back. Today, we don't have anyone telling us we need to go to a shir. We don't have anyone telling us that we have to do a mitzvah, that we have to makai a mitzvah, that we have to keep shulchan aruch, we have to grow in Yiddishkeit. No one's telling us we have to. But then, that's where we now need to reach a deeper level of Mesiris Nefesh. That without our conscious self disappearing, the Yechidah, the conviction of Yechidah, the conviction of Mesiris Nefesh, which comes from the Yechidah Sheba Nefesh, which is this is how it has to be and couldn't be anything different. The commitment, the surrender, the absolute certainty, the no questions asked, that this is the way we have to be, has to be there even when we're not being threatened and even when our conscious self is not disappearing. In other words, on a regular routine day, this is what the Rebbe was trying to say, I think, on a regular routine day, we wake up in the morning and everything is working. Our brain is working. Our heart is working. We're learning. We're understanding. We're asking questions. We're processing. Everything is normal. And then we faced with a dilemma. Should we do this mitzvah or not? Should we go out of our way to help another yid? Should we have a bit more bittul and put ourselves to a side to be able to do what the Eibishter wants from us, to do what the Rebbe is asking us to do? We have to dig deep and bring the yechidah sheba nefesh, the bittul, and the mesiras nefesh coming from the yechidah sheba nefesh. We have to bring it into the regular routine day where our conscious self is fully working. It's like the matz, the chametz on Shavuos, which is, it's a sense of self, but it's based on the matzah. It's like the donkey and the ox, which is based on the sheep. It's like the nishma, but it's based on the naseh. And that's the ultimate mesiras nefesh. That when we have to get up in the morning and we're lazy to get up because we're supposed to do something holy and we're lazy to do it, and we say, no, there's no question, we have to do it. Now again, this is the ultimate madrega, but of course we have to try, at least in some areas, and we have to try and build in that mesiras nefesh. That's what the Rebbe says, and at the end of the Maamar, the Rebbe sort of hints to the fact that the real expression of this madrega is when the Moshe Rabbeinu is hidden, like it is now. That the Moshe Rabbeinu is hidden, and he says it's expressed in Kosis Lamor. They were upset that the Eibishter isn't Begoli. In other words, now we have the ability to live in such a way that even though everything is good and everything, we're not threatened. And on the one hand, the spirituality and the Moshe Rabbeinu of our generation is sort of hidden a little bit, and we're not getting that constant koyach. That's when we bring out the real mesiras nefesh. That to us, ani lo nivresi ela l'shamash eskoini. That my whole identity is still Hashem. My world revolves around Hashem. My conscious self, my subconscious self, everything about us revolves around Hashem. And we try and make that our framework, our mindset. And therefore we try and apply the concept of mesiras nefesh, not by dying, but by living like a yid, with conviction, with determination, with surrender. And I think that's such an important thing. Such an important thing to apply now. We often ask ourselves the questions after Gimel Tammuz have been so many years, and it's taka big golus. And I'll just end with I'm sure I've told the story before, but I'll end with this story. There's one of the letters that the Rebbe I once read, where the Rebbe wrote to a person. You know, sometimes you read the Rebbe's letter and it's hard to tell what the question was or what the writer had written, but you can tell sometimes in the way the Rebbe's answering. And what obviously happened here was there was a person who wrote a book, a history book, or a book describing Chassidim of yesteryear, Shtetlach of Chassidim. And he obviously described the Fabrengans and the warmth and the Avas Yisrael and the whole life of Chassidim that it was in the old shtetl. And the title of the book was called Vergangenem Yorin, years that have gone by, years that have passed. And the Rebbe writes the letter and he says the following. He says, I got your book. And he first compliments him. It's very, very beautifully written. And you described and you captured the life of Chassidim and the atmosphere and the culture and the warmth and the avos, everything. You captured it really well, and it gives him a very beautiful compliment. But, says the Rebbe, I have to take issue with the title of the book, Vergangenem Yorin, Years of Amol, years that went by. Says the Rebbe, it's not years that was, it's years that is. This is still alive, and it's exactly the same. And whatever happened then has to be more like the Friedrich Rebbe said, America is nicht anders. And the Rebbe came to America on Chof Chassivin, and that was the idea, that the same bittel and the same Ibrigemkeit and the same Chassidishkeit has to be now with all its tests and all the materialism and all the problems and the tests that we have. Says the Rebbe, are you going to tell me that now it's much harder? The Rebbe asked this question like we ask ourselves a lot of times. Are you going to tell that it's much harder and it's much darker and it's so much more difficult today to connect in that way? Says the Rebbe, two answers. One is sometimes we talk ourselves into it. It's not harder. Sometimes it's the same if we just try. Okay? That's sometimes hard to understand because we take a live in a dark time, l'cha'ira. Then the Rebbe says that he goes further and he says, maybe it is true. And even if it is true, that's the Rebbe says, that the darkness now is much greater than before. And maybe we can venture to say that after Gimel Tammuz, of course, the darkness is much bigger. However, says the Rebbe, if the darkness is bigger, the koichus are stronger. And the Rebbe gives us koichus, the Eibishter gives us koichus to be able to serve Hashem in that way, to have the same mesiras nefesh. But the way the Rebbe explains it in this maimer is that not only we're able to do the same Mesiras Nefesh, it's a deeper Mesiras Nefesh. The concept, the mindset we have to have is that Chassidus is alive, and whatever the Rebbe told us to do, and whatever Chassidus demands from us, is a reality. It's a reality today. So that, it's not like, you know, that was okay then, but now it's different. The Rebbe tells us it's not different. In fact, if anything, it's only deeper. The Mesiras Nefesh deepens. Not that the, nowadays it's not that the bittel went away. On the contrary, the bittel is coming into the self. The matzah is coming into the chametz. The tzoin, the sheep, is coming into the shor and the chamor. But it's all, the starting point is still bittel. The starting point is the same bittel. Now, of course, we're not on the madrega of Hasidim of Amol. We're not on the madrega of Mendel Futterfass or Mendel Haradoker, or these people, all these great. Or all these great chassidim that we always talk about and read about and tell stories about, obviously we're not in their madrega, obviously not. But the mindset is, has to be the same, and the mindset has to be the mindset of bittul and the mindset of mesiras nefesh. It doesn't come, it's something we have to learn about, and it's a great theme that comes from the Rebbe's Torah. It will be a grave mistake to think that the Rebbe is not into bittul. The Rebbe is into bittul even more than other abeim in a way. The madregas of bittul that the Rebbe talks about in Mamorim and in chassidus is unbelievable. And that has to be the foundation. The foundation is not about us. It's not about ourselves. It's ani loy nivresi elo l'sham mishas koini. Oh, we have a nefesh abamis, of course, and we have the yetzahara, and not always we're able to overpower. That's true, but first we have to build that mindset, and we have to find ways, and this is the lesson of Atat Tzaveh, of trying in our life, each person in their own journey, each person in their own way, what their challenges are, but to try and go beyond ourselves, to try the bittul, the mesiras nefesh, even if I don't understand something, or even if I want something else, even if myself tells me that, no, I have to do one thing, but Hashem says I should do something else, that we have to build up the conviction and the surrender and the determination to do what the Eibishter wants from us, and to be able to live our life with that type of avodas Hashem, of focusing, making a lakus, making godliness the center of our lives. I think that's one. What's the key lessons you take away from Atat Tzaveh? And as I said, that's a great theme that runs through the Rebbe's Sichas. So thank you all for listening, let's hope that we shouldn't even have to get the Gimel Talmud. We should just take the lessons, and Mashiach should be here. And we should have these galus, and we'll see the Rebbe, and we'll be able to understand what this is all about. And if anyone wants to ask a question, I could unmute. And how we work?
Thank you.
Oh, you can unmute yourself if you want. Okay, thank you very much, everyone, and hatzlocha in al inyanim.